Hello, I'm Beth Kesselman, and this is Smashing the Ceiling, a podcast on social hiring and a St. Stephen's Community House production. Thanks for joining us. St. Stephen's Community House acknowledges that our locations are situated upon traditional territories of the Wendat, Anishinaabeg Nation, the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations, and the Métis Nation. The treaty that was signed for this particular parcel of land is collectively referred to as the Toronto Purchase and applies to lands east of Brown's Line to Woodbine Avenue and north towards Newmarket. St. Stephen's Community House is a guest, and we recognize the enduring presence of the Indigenous peoples on this land. Welcome to episode 5 of Smash the Ceiling. Thanks for joining us again. First, feel free to engage with us on social media. We're at Peer Pathways TO for both Twitter and Instagram. This episode, we have Lisa Robinson from Volunteer Toronto joining us. We were a little short on space to record and ended up meeting at the Toronto Reference Library, which was a lovely change of pace, and I would really like to thank the Toronto Reference Library for being able to provide us with space. I'm really happy that Lisa could join us on Smash the Ceiling, and I hope you find our chat enjoyable and educational. I know I did. Okay. I don't know why.
Almost more frustrating that there's no like rhyme or reason for it.
I know, like, so we're gonna roll with this.
Don't touch anything.
We're not gonna touch anything.
Perfect.
So I guess first I should thank you Lisa for coming on our podcast. It's so great that you're here, and we really appreciate you joining us and living through our technical difficulties, which is sort of like a rite of passage for this podcast if you're gonna be on it.
I mean, or any podcast really, I'd say, in the first little while.
That's true.
But thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah.
So tell us who you are and about your organization, and start there.
Cool. So I'm Lisa, and I'm at Volunteer Toronto, and I'm, I guess my title's program developer, supportive placement. And at Volunteer Toronto, we connect the community to volunteer opportunities, as well as provide support for organizations. And through like research and lots of different training opportunities and this sort of thing. But specifically, I'm looking at how we can minimize barriers to volunteering for those who face significant barriers to either volunteering or entering the work environment, and how we can do that better at Volunteer Toronto.
And how did this, or what spurred the interest?
Yeah, so... I can't take credit for this. This was before my time. But at Volunteer Toronto, there's a couple different ways that we support individuals in the community looking for volunteer opportunities. And one of those ways is through referral appointments. So we have referral counselors who are volunteer. There's different referral counselors there each day. You can make an appointment with them for about half an hour to learn more about volunteering and how to access different opportunities out there. What does it look like to apply for a volunteer position? These sorts of things. And what Volunteer Toronto was seeing was that those who are coming for referral appointments, it wasn't just about how do I find a good volunteer position. It was about how do I have a resume? What if my English skills are not what they might need for that particular role? What if I have mental health issues and I can't be a consistent volunteer? What if my physical needs are beyond what the organizations are advertising that they can support at this time? So that kind of, from that came the idea, like, well, there's more we can definitely do here, but in the spirit of wanting to give it our best try, Ontario Trillium Foundation, we applied to them, and they gave us money to explore this idea.
Awesome. And can I ask, what did it look like for, what were the statistics around disability coming in?
Yeah. So I guess specifically looking at different statistics and these sorts of things, we haven't looked at like numbers per se. We're looking at barriers. Mm-hmm. So defining it by what sort of categories of barriers exist, rather than being like, okay, if you have a disability, then this is the issue, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But as far as what kind of barriers do exist for individuals out there, kind of based on research, we've divided them up into 5 main categories.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first is communication and language barriers. So what does that look like? It looks like maybe not having your sector specific grasp of English or even fluency, what you would consider fluency in English. It also looks like not being, not necessarily being aware of like, what does communication in an informal way look like in the employment realm or volunteer mm-hmm. realm? And then we also have education and qualifications, the idea of education attained internationally, not having the same legitimacy necessarily, and how do you develop transferable skills that will complement your education if you're looking for employment and you're new to Canada. Yeah. And then past work experience. Sometimes barriers result in large gaps in your resume, and yes. that can be very off-putting for employers. So how do we fill those gaps with volunteering mm-hmm. and do that in a way that employers respond to? And then process or environment. Volunteering is becoming so much more professionalized, the process of it. The barriers that exist in applying for employment are now mirrored in applying for volunteer opportunities because of the professionalization. And then internalized beliefs. Individuals who face barriers to volunteering, they don't just face barriers to volunteering. It's the idea of invisibility and self-concept and self-worth. And internalizing that based on an environment and a system that has told you your whole life you don't fit in, mm-hmm. Or these are your challenges that you need to overcome. And that is kind of the final sort of category. Within those, we can pinpoint so many different things, and it's going to be really specific to individuals. But at least for me, in organizing all the information I was taking in and being able to kind of put it out in a palatable way, that's kind of how we've broken it down.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. And so what are you doing now on this project, yeah. and where do you hope to be going in the future? What are your goals here?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I guess what I'm doing right now, a really important thing in this project was not just looking at the individual experience, but also how do we support organizations in supporting individuals who have faced a lot of barriers in integrating into a volunteer role, and what does that look like? So I've been traveling all over the city of Toronto, which has actually been lovely. I've discovered so many places that I don't often get to, like the Toronto Reference Library.
It's a great place.
Yeah, it really is. Shout out to that. And talking to experts in, I want to say the sector, but that's not true, because I've talked to people in for-profit consulting that work on limiting barriers and minimizing barriers. So kind of anyone who has some sort of expertise in inclusivity, accessibility, or minimizing barriers in different environments, and doing kind of what we're doing right now, except that I'd be asking more of the questions and they'd be giving more of the answers. And trying to learn from that. I really think that there's already like a lot of knowledge out there. We're just all working in silos. So bringing that all together. And then in that also, well, everyone has barriers. I would not consider myself someone who has faced significant barriers. So knowing that I'm not an expert in this by any means, I am currently recruiting for focus group members. So anyone who identifies as having faced significant barriers to employment, education, or volunteering, we've been recruiting and we'll be running hopefully 4 different focus groups with 15 participants each. So we're talking to 60-ish individuals and learning from their experiences, and also what do they need to make this process like really less traumatizing, I'd say. Because there really is like a lot of trauma involved in it.
So. No, there is, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
And when's the next focus group being held?
So actually our first focus group will be in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. And so if someone wants to get involved in that, how would they?
So you can either email me at lrobinson@volunteertoronto.ca, or you're welcome to walk into our office and ask for me at 344 Bloor Street West, Suite 404. Or if you want to get a little more information before you reach out, if you go to the volunteertoronto.ca website, we currently on our volunteer board have a posting for focus group members. So if you just search focus group members, it'll come up. For participants, we are offering tokens to and from the focus group, and we'll be having food there. So we'll get to snack and chat and talk and share ideas, and then a $10 Tim Hortons gift card to say thank you at the end for their time. And it's about a 2-hour commitment, just one time.
Awesome. And if organizations, do you have like posters you can give organizations and things if they email you?
Yeah. So if organizations want to email me, I have a pamphlet for recruiting individuals for focus groups. Also, I am happy to work with our team and come up with resources to send as far as promoting it if organizations are looking for that. And also, if you're someone who works in the sector or you have some knowledge to share around accessibility and inclusivity and diversity, please reach out and we'll chat, and it might be a quick conversation to figure out if we want to chat more. But at this point, I think lots of people have lots to share and I have lots to learn. So get in touch with me.
There you go.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
No problem.
That's a really good, in this sector, we're always looking to promote opportunities to decrease those barriers, right? And to promote wellness and inclusivity in employment and employable activities.
Right? Yeah, so absolutely.
Really fabulous. And thank you for taking part in that project. And
yeah, no, I feel like bearing witness to it, I guess, in a way, is what I can offer, to this project. So I feel really like good to be a part of it. And I think that a lot of barriers that exist also result in individuals who face those barriers' voices being silenced on like the kind of greater stage. So I think that removes a certain level of urgency to making big changes to the issue. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that some people's voices will get heard.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So from your learning so far, I know this is a longer project. You mentioned a year long.
Yeah. If it was an easy problem, I always say this, but like if it was an easy problem to fix or to change, we wouldn't be talking about it right now, because I really do believe everyone has good intentions. To just reiterate, it's a longer project, but go for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What have you gleaned so far that, as far as like accessibility, quick or easy things that organizations can implement to increase accessibility to people with barriers and disability, and different levels of ability, I should say, to help them gain entrance into volunteering?
Yeah. So I'd give like kind of three main easy-ish and quick takeaways. The first thing is think about how you're asking people to contact your organization. And a lot of what we see right now in Volunteer Toronto is like email your resume here, or phone and leave a voicemail here, which is great. Like give people options. That's a great start if you're doing that. But the reality is that not everyone has access to a computer. So giving a place where you can stop in and a contact name of the person that you can look for. I'd also say think about whether a resume is necessary, because not everyone has that. Or at least think about what could a resume look like. What are all the different forms that it could look like? Maybe it's a paragraph of why you're interested in being involved with this organization and three skills you want to bring. Mm-hmm. Just kind of minimizing, resumes look really different in many different places, and some people haven't had access to resources that help them to build a resume. Think about resumes and different ways that you can learn about the person. And telephone. If someone phones and leaves a message, that might be the hardest thing they've done all day. So make sure you call them back, and it might take you a little while, but we hear really often, I phoned and I left 6 messages and I haven't heard anything. And I don't say that in like a, you should be returning your calls way. I just mean like, if you're already facing a lot of exclusion, that whether, and it's not intention to be an exclusive move or anything, but it can be really easy to internalize that as an individual. Mm-hmm. The third one would be, and this one's a lot, doesn't take a lot of like specific action, but just start to think about like what assumptions are you making day to day about individuals that you see and what their capabilities might be. The reality is that like we are given scripts, social scripts, in the way that we grow up. And we only know what we know based on the information we've collected so far. So start to question yourself and be like, okay, if I've learned this certain thing about individuals who don't show up for work or have large gaps in their resume, what assumptions am I making about that person's life, their abilities, and what they can bring as far as value to my organization or volunteer experience? And just start to like compassionately investigate that with yourself. And the reality is that like I have biases, I have assumptions, but as soon as we start to recognize them and name them, then we start to do a little bit better job of not always jumping to those conclusions.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. Thanks.
I think you said a couple of really interesting things that I kind of want to touch on too, because we see this regularly in employment services, which is like we will talk to people who will leave us, like, you know, 6-12 voicemails. Yeah. And you can take a perspective of, wow, this person, I don't know, they seem really, you know, maybe I'm going to have trouble managing that relationship.
Yeah. Right?
And that can be intimidating as a person and as a business person, especially because you're not a social worker when you're in HR. You're
absolutely,
you know, and or in a different kind of role where you're going to be interviewing volunteers. So it's, you know, I would say that in that situation, just let them know. When you call them back, say, you know, it's okay, I will get back to you, you know, and build that relationship and build that trust. Because when somebody knows that you're responsive, then it's going to be easier for you to have that conversation.
Yeah.
And also with resumes.
Right. The hot topic.
The hot topic.
Resumes.
I am a lover and hater of resumes.
Yeah.
So in a previous incarnation in my life, I was a recruiter. And so I was
interesting.
There's so many of us in employment services. It's really shocking how many of us had been somewhat at least touching corporate recruiting in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So I used to be a third-party recruiter, and the accounts that I would recruit for were primarily the banks and the government. So I was taking people's resumes and ripping them down and rebuilding them, and my job was to get them through applicant tracking systems.
Yeah, it's that game, like how many keywords can you get in and these sorts of things.
So issues of length and explanation, and like, you know, I would call somebody and the first thing I would do is I would rip through their resume and look through all their dates and grill them on all the little things to make sure I had all the information that I needed to advocate. It's my job at the time. I only got paid if they got the job as an external recruiter. So it's a commission-based role.
Yeah.
And so it's... You know, and now in the nonprofit sector, I think about my past experience and I'm like, how, what a service it is to have somebody be able to navigate that system for you.
Yeah.
And also, what the kind of skill you need to be able to do that, because just resumes in itself is an incredible skill. And
oh, I would agree.
And where you and how you write a resume and depends so much on who's going to be receiving it. Is it going through an applicant tracking system or a human resources information system? Is it going to a small mom and pop shop where you're just going to be handing out a one pager? Is it going to be emailed into a medium-sized business where they don't have technology and they're just going to be screening it through Outlook? There are so many of these different things, and you write it each, you tailor it to each of these specific situations. But unless you have the background knowledge and information.
Yeah. Like, I just learned so much there about resumes, and I've been like navigating the job market for over 10 years now.
But like, it's one of those things. Like, it's, I feel comfortable with it now because of, I've applied. You try and help other people get access to the labor market, right?
Yeah.
So you apply across this vast sort of spectrum, right?
Yeah.
And it's, and a resume is a marketing document. So when it's coming to volunteering or it's coming towards entry-level roles especially, like, it's really more of a barrier than it is to anything else, because now you're not looking at an individual based on, like, you're looking for keywords.
Yeah.
One, so if somebody's gonna put that in there if they think they're gonna, if they think it's going to benefit them. And two, you're not going to be getting a full picture anyway.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right?
Yeah. So it's really challenging from at least my perspective now, especially when you're you know, you're talking with somebody whose barrier to the labor market, barrier to volunteering, barrier just to self-improvement.
Yeah.
Or moving forward, I should say.
Yeah.
Is a piece of paper.
Yeah. Like, how do you capture someone's, like, essence and worth in that? It is one of the key barriers, I think, to employment, to education, to especially higher level education, because you have to submit, like, resumes and these sorts of things.
Yeah, for sure.
And imagine if you grew up in a context where it's a much more, like, community-focused environment, and it's all about relationships, and connections, and resumes actually don't mean anything. Yeah. And then you come to, let's say you're a newcomer, and you come here, and everyone's like, oh, no, you need to have this full piece of paper that, like highlights all of the things that you've done. And they're like, yeah, but what about the people I know?
And also, how do you define what is valuable? How does a person right. who might be coming from a lot of different challenge or might be looking at things from a different perspective define what you think is valuable in them, where they're going, what they think is valuable in them?
Yeah,
it's very hard for somebody to do, and it, you know, but also I think it's very poignant on a literacy level too, because
yes, absolutely,
I've had the real privilege, because this program that I'm in is called the Peer Pathways Project. You know, I've had the privilege of speaking with, learning about, you know, a lot of people who have experience with homelessness, addiction, or drug use, and sometimes what we see is a low educational attainment because of life.
Yeah,
right?
Life happens.
Right, life happens. And yet the skills that we're seeing are really high social fluidity, ability yeah. to navigate, ability to facilitate, ability to excellent communication skills, you know, things that we see fairly regularly, and I'm speaking, you know, just from anecdotal experience,
of course,
right?
Yeah.
But how do you put that on paper?
Right. Yeah, especially when they want you to line it all up by date.
By date.
Like, exactly. This is the thing. Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
It's an interesting, yeah, and I think you're right. It just, like, creates so many barriers. And it's interesting that you've had both those sides too, where you, like, figured out how to work the system, and now you're like, well, I know how to work the system, so I can help you work the system, but I don't know how I feel about it. Like, yeah
I go through a spectrum of emotions.
Yeah,
but it's a joy though.
Yeah,
you know, now we're totally, like, in left field.
Bring it back.
Let's bring it back somehow.
I
think it's really great when you sit down with someone and you know, like, they love what they do.
Yeah.
Like,
I really do. Something sort of related, but not exactly. I'm really interested in, like, corporate social responsibility arms of corporations, and, like, how can we leverage them in this, like, even in distributing information and figuring out ways to, like, how do we take CSR more inside the corporations and look at, like, I don't know, how do we refine hiring practices and these sorts of things so that everyone's participating in, like, the economic game, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right now the steps to employment are, like, traditional employment.
Yeah.
Are so steep and so, like, extended. So if you take somebody, like, let's look at someone who's, we're going to say an adult who maybe hasn't had a lot of access to education and hasn't had a lot of access to not worked in a while and sort
yeah.
of piecemeal a bit. And now let's say they want to start and they want to get, like, a job and a career path.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now you might need a certification, and you're going to volunteer, and then you're going to get a part-time job doing something hopefully that is minorly related to what you want to do.
Or at least gives you some sort of contact.
That's right.
In the world of what you want to do.
That's right.
Yeah.
Some sort of contact. And then maybe you'll get hired on, or you can find another job in 6 months to a year after that is more related to what you want to do. And then, like, and it's just like, you can 7 steps before you get a job that you're
yeah. And there's these like. Steps, and then there's those moments in between where you, like, I don't know, I could see, I've or have gotten overwhelmed by, like, okay, so you're telling me in 10 years, like, why, why do I want to work this hard right now? You know, like, especially if you've faced significant barriers already. Yeah. And what you've learned is that, like, hard work doesn't always get you where you want to go.
Yeah.
And actually, have you looked at the opportunity equation, the newest report out by United Way?
I haven't.
Okay. I will give you a really quick summary
of it.
Please
do.
Because it's very related to, like, kind of, I think, the potential for volunteering and increasing employability. Basically, the most recent report came out, and one of the key sort of findings was that the percentage of individuals who... So the opportunity equation is the idea that with hard work and a couple, like, good breaks or good opportunities, you will be able to find success, and the belief behind that. What has recently come out is that 54% of people in the, like, beginning career stages of their life no longer believe that. It's not about hard work and a couple opportunities equaling success. It's actually the impact of the geography of where you're born, the color of your skin, these sorts of things play just as important a role to what you have access to, and it's all about access equals opportunity. And so I think that what volunteering, like, relating it back to what I'm looking at, what volunteering has the potential to do is increase access. That increases different assets. So there's this framework, the sustainable livelihoods framework, mm-hmm. which is just, like, a really, I don't know, for me, I find it to be a very, like, tangible, understandable way to frame economic vulnerability and poverty. And it looks at susceptibility to these things in five different sort of asset ways. Only one of those is financial. So it looks at, as an individual, if you have, like, one strong area in these assets, your vulnerability to poverty is less, and you have more access. Does that make sense so mm-hmm. far? So there's financial assets, there's human assets, personal assets, social assets, and physical assets. Physical assets look at the environment around you and natural resources, these sorts of things. Financial assets look like money, like, what is your bank account value? Mm-hmm. These things aren't relevant to volunteering, really. But human assets look at what sort of, like, skills do you have, those employability skills, communication skills, these sorts of things. Social assets look at your connections and your mm-hmm. access to certain communities and certain areas in the city. And then personal assets are those internalized things that we talked about at the beginning, like your self-concept, your confidence. And those three things, like, those are the things that fluctuate with barriers, right? They're the things that, like, with a good volunteering opportunity, your self-concept can increase. Or with access to someone who can help you navigate the job market, that can give you more connections. So your social assets increase. And all of these things combined increase your access, which could actually counteract the opportunity, the perception of the opportunity equation, and how that's changed, and how it's actually not just a perception, is also what this report has shown as well. So mm-hmm. I don't know, it's like, that's kind of like a convoluted, like, theoretical way, but, like, when we're looking at how do we measure impact, like, here's a grounding that we're looking at right now as far as what's happening in Toronto based on research, and also, like, how do we leverage that to better understand the role that volunteering can have, the role that employment services can have, and these sorts of things. It's, like, it's something I'm excited about. When that report came out, I'd already kind of, we'd started talking about this sustainable livelihoods framework, and then I'm like, whoa, these things are, like, so connected.
Absolutely.
And it's, I think, like, that's another challenge we're always up against, is how do you measure the intangible, you know? And maybe this gives us a starting point.
Yeah.
So that's something that I've been looking at, and kind of how we're, like, how we're framing what sort of supports we can target. So around, like, social, developing social assets, developing human assets, and developing personal assets, to give it an intention, and, you know, evidence informed is where it's at right now in the sector. So
absolutely. Question.
Yeah.
Do you guys do follow-up on your volunteers? Like, you do this intake where you help them navigate the volunteering system, And then, like, do you follow up with, like, a 6 month or something?
So at the end of every referral appointment, they're asked if we can follow up in 3 months, I think,
okay,
to find out if they have. And we do, but we don't really, like, track it completely. So that's part of what we're looking at. Like, what is the evaluation? That's part of what I'm looking at is, like, how do we evaluate this? What's the follow-up? What's the timeline that makes sense? And how do we start to track that a little bit more?
Absolutely, because I'm thinking, it would be really interesting to see the statistics from people who secure volunteer roles and then find gainful employment through the volunteer activities. Because I was just thinking as you were speaking, you know, like, how many times have we heard, well, I was volunteering there, and then somebody, you know, then I was interviewed for a role there, and then, you know, I became an employee.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's, like, that's a bit of, like, myth or the unicorn of the volunteering, right? Like, that used to be the case, but with professionalization of the sector and everything, volunteering doesn't actually, like, there's no guarantee, right?
That's true.
And so, especially if you're a newcomer to Canada, often you've been told that, well, a great way to enter into the job market is to volunteer. Whether it's explicitly said or not, the assumption usually is volunteer and get a job with that organization. So that's why our focus is really on development of transferable skills, because we don't want to perpetuate that myth, and it is about educating and setting expectations appropriately, but finding a way that we can still, like, create some sort of impact, because it really is about, like, poverty reduction, reducing economic vulnerability. Like, there's a reason that there's programs for employment and these sorts of things, because we live in a world that to have access, you have to be making money in some way, you know, or to have more robust access, or, you know, these things.
Yeah. Yes. So you're making recommendations to, obviously, your organization.
Yeah.
Are you also going to be making recommendations or, like, meeting with organizations to tell them to, like, discuss accessibility and things like that? And that's what you're doing now too?
So I'm really just information collecting right now.
Now you are.
Yeah. But next steps.
Yes.
Oh yeah. You asked about this earlier and then we went on a tangent, but back to the next steps. So next steps, we'll be putting out a report, on, like, what we found, because that will be the compelling ground evidence to be like, we need to do something kind of now. And then we are going to have recommendations in there that are just kind of like, not just, there'll be blanket recommendations for any organization. Look at your organization and see if you're doing this well. On the Volunteer Toronto side, part of what I'm doing is I'll be developing, like, a full program plan that we will then use to access, hopefully, funding to implement that program. And then something interesting that I've been looking at, and this isn't we're going to do this, but as part of at Volunteer Toronto, we currently have a youth audit program. So it's a group of youth who organizations can ask to come in and audit their volunteer program to make it more youth friendly. So we're looking at
that's incredibly cool.
It's really cool, and it's gotten great feedback. A couple different times they've been like, why don't you do this for more ways of inclusivity? Fast forward to now, I'm actually meeting with the youth audit team in 2 weeks to learn more about their experience and stuff, and exploring that as part of Volunteer Toronto's program that we're implementing to support our organizations. And it wouldn't be youth who are part of the audit team. It would be individuals who have faced barriers to volunteering or are currently facing barriers to volunteering or employment, and coming in and making recommendations. So that's part of what we're looking at. And I've also started putting together an advisory committee for the actual report part and the program development. Again, knowing that I am not there are so many voices and opinions that we want to make sure are included, and experiences. So also writing a report by yourself is, like, no one wants to do that. You don't get the best information from that. So looking at that as well. So definitely trying to get as many voices on this project as possible, and as many experiences, because the more we know, the less likely I think we are to make, like, to have to revisit it all the time, you know, and make changes all the time. Although I have no doubt there will be lots of different iterations of this, for sure.
As is life.
Yeah. So the evaluation process. Oh, that didn't quite work. What do we need to change? Mm-hmm. Still not quite there. Let's change this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's always a refining process.
Yeah. Yeah. Always. And humans are always evolving in society. And like, it's not just the program. It's everything around us, too. So
it's very, yeah. very true.
I guess like the only thing that I would want to say, and I think I touched on this a little bit before, but there is so much good that's already happening out there in all the organizations, in individual intentions and this sort of thing. And I only say that because I think it's really easy to focus on, hear all the things that aren't working. And that is the nature of what I need to do right now, to get to a place of like what does work. But as I go around and talk to individuals, I cannot tell you how enthusiastic people are about what we're doing, how much they want to be a part of it, and how almost much relief there is as far as like, yes, we have been talking about this and talking about this in our organization, and we know it's an issue, and here's what we're trying to do. But it is a huge thing. It is daunting to take on. Give us a roadmap and we will do it. But we just don't have the resources right now. And I think that is a really important thing. I think the sector is really ready for this, and to kind of take the conversation into action. And what I kind of see Volunteer Toronto's role in doing this is like collecting all those good things that are already happening in isolation, or maybe just between a couple organizations. How do we collect all that for everybody and then put it out there in a way that like everyone now has a best practice, because everyone was already doing a great practice, it just wasn't combined with all the other great practices to make it best practice. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So I find that encouraging. I spend a lot of time talking about like, hey, what's hard about life? but then you start talking and the resilience of individuals and organizations, as well as individuals accessing or looking to access volunteer and employment and stuff, is people want to work, and people want to work hard at changing this. So that's good.
That is great.
Yeah.
And well said.
Thank you.
I think that what you were talking about before, this the service, like going into an organization and making recommendations on how to improve, is just such an incredible thing, like, because it's always a challenge. And you said something, you know, poignant at another time, which was that coordinating volunteers is no longer a dedicated
yeah.
role.
Yeah.
Right? So there are so many challenges there that, you know, for individuals that aren't trained in managing volunteers, and now it's just a part of your yeah. job, right? And the whole going through the whole selection process, and going yeah. through the training process and all of that, and where does this person fit in?
And yeah, yeah. And it's interesting that you bring that up too, because previous to like returning to school, I worked in an organization where I was a program manager, and part of that was being a volunteer manager. A very small part of it, of like 700 almost adults. And that was one part of my job. So like I get it on, I have experience in, I'm very sensitive, I guess, to that nature and how you're juggling so many different things, right? And it's not a key part of your job. It's a and this.
Yeah.
And reality is that like volunteer management, there's full programs about that now. There are full programs and education that you can take professional development on it. And Volunteer Toronto actually offers some great courses and trainings on our website. But yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the pod.
Anytime. Thank you so much for having me, Beth.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. And
yeah.
I was just thinking, this is so fitting because was it yesterday? It was like International Volunteers Day.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
And last Tuesday was the International Day of Giving, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's been a lot happening, I think.
But so this is well-timed.
Yeah, thanks for having me so close to International Volunteers Day.
Thanks for coming on.
Anytime.
All right. That
wraps up episode 5 of Smash the Ceiling, and thank you so much for listening in. Once again, feel free to connect with us on Twitter or Instagram at Peer Pathways TO. Volunteer Toronto is also active on Twitter and Instagram, and their handle is at Volunteer TO for Twitter and at Volunteer Toronto for Instagram. We hope you join us again next month when David Odie and Tara Piercy join us from the Center of Addiction and Mental Health's Social Determinants of Health team to discuss accommodations in the workplace. Thanks again, and have a great day. St. Stephen's Community House would like to thank United Way, as well as the Ministry of Advanced Education and Skills Development and Employment Ontario, for their continued support with this project. We would also like to acknowledge Monk Turner for allowing us to use Judicious Jude for our music, as well as Satunium for the percussive loop.